Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandra Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandra has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandra Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio, your UFO news authority. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we have, I don't know why I always say my name funny at the beginning of the show, but it's fun. And we have a fun and interesting show today. We have George Lobuono, and I hope I'm saying his name correct. That sounds nice, Lobuono, so hopefully I'm doing that all right. But he is a journalist and researcher into the underside of U.S. history, and Lord knows there's a little bit of that. In 1995, he began researching aliens and alien-related programs. He's recently finished his book titled Alien Mind, The Thought and Behavior of Extraterrestrials. You may be thinking, how would he know how extraterrestrials think and behave? And perhaps it is because he's an ET himself. I don't know. We'll have to ask. I don't think that's it. But he's just done a lot of study in this field, talked to a lot of contactees, but we'll ask him some more details on that very question coming up here. So he's going to share all of his findings of his years of work in this field, and I've heard good things about his book. In fact, I heard from Bob Brown, who used to run the International UFO Congress and is still, you know, an advisor for us, helping us out with that. He said that the book is incredible. It is excellent. I saw him reading it at the MUFON symposium, and I asked him, and he said it was incredible. So that is a good sign from someone who's been in this field for a long time. So I said, I got to have him on the radio show then. We got to talk to George there. So we got him on the show. We'll be talking about that today, something new and interesting. Speaking of the UFO Congress, of course, that's coming up, and this is pretty cool. You can already go to our website or go to UFOCongress.com and register. So you can sign up for the full shebang. So you have your registration in. You can go rent your hotel rooms. You can get all set and ready. And I got to tell you, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I don't know. If you heard the guy that's on the show before me, I get a little influenced by him. I feel like talking like him. I got to tell you, I got a little secret here for you. But the rooms are somewhat limited, so you got to get in and get your rooms as soon as possible because the rooms could be gone, and then you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be wishing you had followed my advice and gotten your room. So call in and check that out, or go to the website. That's the easiest thing to do, of course. That's what I do, everything online. So that's really cool. We've already got that going. Also, speaking of conferences, we actually have on our YouTube site, we're now a YouTube partner. So they have kind of allowed us to do some cooler and better things than most YouTubers can do, which is we can customize our site and we can put longer programs up there for rental. So if you've seen some of the DVDs we have on our website, especially the Crash Conference ones, and you're curious, you know, would I even like that? I'd like to see it first. Well, you can go watch it for $3 on YouTube. You have access to it for 3 days and check it out before you decide whether or not you want to get the DVD, or maybe that's all you wanted to do is watch it once and so you don't need the whole DVD for that. So you can go to YouTube and do that. You can go to Open Minds TV at YouTube or just go to our website and you'll be able to click from it. From there, too, that's openminds.tv, of course. So the first one we have up is Michael Schrad. And we put up clips, too, that you can watch for free. And already the first clip we put up has thousands of people watching it, real popular. He just goes through tons and tons of cases from CUFOS, which was a very popular UFO research group, just case after case after case after case. So lots of – and with his own illustrations that are really cool. And then new time for the radio show, only one more time at 9 p.m. Arizona time here at the KFNX studios in Arizona. because, and I've gotten some people excited about this, we're going to go back to our longer format, hour and a half with no commercials. So hopefully you like that. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll be able to get some more info. But I'm going to miss these guys at KFNX. They've been really great, I got to tell you. So if you're in Arizona, you want a radio show, come talk to KFNX. They're cool guys. Now, before we talk to George about the alien mind, every day, practically every day, we have UFO news headlines on the front page of our website. And we have our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, here to share us.
Greetings, Alejandro.
Hello.
Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds news brief for Monday, August 16th, 2010. He's back. Richard Heen, better known as the Balloon Boy's father, is in the news again. He has posted a video on YouTube showing him reviewing NASA images of the Martian surface. Heen highlights certain objects on the planet's surface and draws conclusions as to what they might be. For example, he points out objects that resemble body parts, like heads, bones, and even a snout. A snout, Alejandro. Do you think there are snouts on Mars?
What do I know? Hopefully I can go there one day and see.
I hope there aren't snouts.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
We've got the hot snouts here. We got the habaneros. Is that what they call those little boars?
Javelina.
Javelinas.
Welcome to the Southwest, my friend. Multiple UFOs were spotted over St. Paul, Minnesota last week. The bright lights in the night sky formed a line, then moved around, then formed a line again, then moved around again. Witnesses gathered in the street to watch the unidentified flying objects, and the local ABC affiliate posted a video of the UFOs in the sky. Did you see the video, Alejandro?
I don't know. I look at
in the Twin Cities, there were five lights in the sky, and they sort of lined up, and the light in the middle was blinking.
Oh, I did see that.
And when I first saw the video, I thought it was just a very large craft.
Right, me too.
And then they all moved around.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to watch.
I thought that video was very interesting.
And I'm not sure who shot the video, but I think ABC actually did because they were gathered because they show the crowd in the street. And there's like a mob outside, people with children and everything. They're just looking up at the sky watching these strange lights move around.
Yeah, I saw it was reported that it was ABC, but they didn't say that. They didn't have any comments on it. And they didn't really describe what was going on, which is kind of interesting.
I think they were more interested that there was a crowd of people looking at the sky.
Yeah, well, it was interesting.
Brazil announced last week that it will begin reporting UFOs. Military and civilian pilots, as well as air traffic controllers, will now be required to report any experiences with unidentified flying objects to the Aerospace Defense Command in Brazil, along with any photo or video proof. The evidence will be cataloged and made available to researchers and anyone else who might be interested. This is really cool, and I think this is in line with a lot of other countries with a push to get this information out to the public. You know, there's a push in Argentina right now. We've got a story about that on our website. And it also reminds me of Mario Borghesio in the European Union pushing to get sort of an official X-Files department formed and a department to get this information to the public for research.
Some people are arguing that all they're going to do is collect those sightings and then put them in an archive and they're not serious about it. However, A.J. Gavard, who is a researcher out there, he says he's talked to these generals, and he's got these interviews online and stuff, and a lot of these people really take this serious, and they're not just going to shuffle paperwork or shuffle these things around. They take this stuff serious, even though they don't have a formal investigation group together. Hopefully that'll happen.
Well, that's great. I hope that's how it happens, and you know, I hope they do make it public so others who do the research can research.
Exactly.
People like AJ. That'll be great.
Yep.
The SETI Institute hosted SETICon over the weekend in California's Silicon Valley. The event featured talks, panels, and one-on-one interactions, all dealing with the science and science fiction of extraterrestrial life. SETICon was attended by astronauts, actors, and other science-minded professionals. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is perhaps best known for their efforts in listening for alien signals from space. At SETICon, Seth Shostak, SETI's senior astronomer, said that our chances of finding ET are pretty good, and proof could come in the next 25 years.
Yeah, he's very positive about them having success. They try different new stuff, but I don't know if you look at Stan Friedman talk about them, you know, and a lot of scientists who are talking about maybe they're doing things that are not necessarily the best way to do it, and it's unfortunate that they don't research our arena because, and I have a story where I had talked to Shostak about UFOs, and he said, well, if there's so many UFOs, why don't astronomers see them? Well, they have, and there's a lot of famous stories that way, if he would have done any research at all. So I put the story up. I still haven't sent it to him yet. I have to send him my story because I couldn't think of some of the details and names when I was talking to him. So I'll send that to him, and hopefully he'll read Peter Sturrock, Dr. Peter Sturrock's books or Hynek's books and these famous astronomers who have seen UFOs.
That's a really cool response article, and I'm glad you put it up. I hope he does read it, too.
I do. He's a great guy. I would love to talk to him. He's really a nice and very approachable guy.
Right. And lastly, AOL News published a story today about Elvis Presley and his obsession with UFOs. Apparently, Elvis had several UFO sightings, and his father even saw a UFO the night Elvis was born. The primary source for the story was Michael Luckman, author of the book Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection. Luckman was a guest on Open Minds Radio in May, and he talked about Elvis as well as other musicians and their ET encounters. We actually had him on the show 2 weeks in a row, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. It was a real good show, too.
That's it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed.
Thank you, Jason. Speaking of the and more part, some of the other stories we have out there. We have the one I just talked about, the astronomers see UFOs too, where I did some surveys and case studies where astronomers checked on other astronomers seeing UFOs. We have one on Argentina, which Jason had mentioned a little bit of news there. We have one on Leslie Keene's great new book, where she has a lot of officials from around the world, including several generals, talking about UFOs and UFO research. So you have to check out that review and then go check out her book. But our latest story today is a hot one. As far as I know, this is our scoop where we had found this document. But there's a big aerospace development company. They're one of the main space industry companies in France, and they did, or actually organizations, they did a study on UFOs where not only do they say, yes, UFOs are serious, it's something to look at, but they even talk about the extraterrestrial hypothesis and how it's a valid one and very possibly the right answer to this mystery. So it's really cool what Antonio Huneas did, because he speaks several different languages, who works for us. We've had him on the show. He translated that into English, so you can download the PDF from our website, read it for yourself in English. Really cool stuff. Coming up, George Lobuono and the alien mind, so stay tuned.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Fort McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
One school in New Jersey has decided to get rid of the D because they think it brings up student achievement, because you either pass or you fail. There's no D. A lot of the students are upset in this particular township because they believe that, look, I mean, a D, I mean, it's not, I didn't quite fail. So what's wrong with that? I like the fact that the students are against it. That's probably a good sign that it's probably something that's a really good idea.
The Laura Ingraham Show, weekday mornings at 6 on KFNX.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
All right, welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Somebody in the chat mentioned, I didn't mention, the time that the show will be going to, and that will be 7 p.m. Arizona time. Right now we're Pacific, and it's kind of strange because the rest of the world, or the rest of the, most of the rest of the country changes their time zone, and we stay the same. So in a few months in November, I think we'll be in Mountain, but right now we're in Pacific. So that's 7 p.m. Arizona time, and we'll be on Blog Talk Radio as well as usual. So you can check us out there and podcast as usual. So you can download us on your iTunes, which many, many, in fact, most of our listeners do, which is great. iPods are awesome. I love my MacBook, and I love my iPhone, and I'm not afraid to admit that. Next up on the show, we have George Lobuono talking about his new book, Alien Minds. George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, great. It's great to have you on the show. It's always fun when a new and interesting book comes out. And you have had sort of versions of this book online for quite some time, right?
Yeah, people got interested in it, so somebody asked me to start serializing it, you know, before it was even done. And it was already on some radio shows, and of course, I just had the paperback out just now. It's called Alien Mind, The Thought and Behavior of Extraterrestrials. It's available on Amazon and, I guess, other sites.
Great, yeah. It is real. I haven't been able to read in-depth the whole thing, but I've been able to read parts and look through it because I want to get an idea of what's going on here. And you have a lot—I mean, it's a lot of information, and is it? It's essentially what you feel the scenario is. When people ask, what are they doing here and why, it looks like you feel your book answers that question.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, it's a huge subject. I mean, some people are still thinking, aliens, you know, meanwhile, we've got astronauts, presidential advisors, if Colonel Philip Corso working in the Pentagon on, says reverse engineering alien technology, says we've got microcomputer, microcircuitry, lasers, you know, optical fibers, all that, because it was copied from Roswell and presumably other crashes. So the thing is, now if that's true, it's a huge subject. I mean, look at this. Just recently, the Kepler satellite went up, and it's looking at 156,000 stars, about 10,000, 15,000 light years away, if I'm not mistaken. And it's watching for little for planets about the size of Earth to go right across the star. 6 weeks into the mission, it's going to be gone for at least 18 months before they think they're done with their data because they've got to let a planet go all the way around, you know, each star. They've already got 140 candidates possible. And these are Earth size. This is brand new. The same size, apparently, as Earth, and some of these may actually be habitable. So, you know, it's not the way it used to be. It's not like people are sitting around just speculating. We have inside sources. We have direct contactees, reportedly alleged abductees. There are people who talk about having seen aliens and alien technology, downed and injured aliens at Roswell that communicated telepathically. So the challenge is, what are they doing? What are they like? And what's really going on?
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I liked about the book because, like you said, it makes sense that there's not just a few civilizations out there. It would make sense there could be a lot, and like you have in here, these mega populations.
Yeah. Well, first off, you know, some people don't know how big the universe is. Imagine like a 7 with 21 zeros after it. That's one recent scientific estimate of the number of stars in the universe. There are billions of galaxies. The Milky Way is only one. And there are billions of stars in many of the larger galaxies. So it's huge. The universe is just huge. And so, that, you know, if there are aliens here that have visited here or aliens anywhere, and it's starting to look like there certainly should be aliens because, you know, they could have evolved billions of years before we did because, remember, Earth, our sun's been around 4.5 billion years. And actually, they're little planets. Planets have been seen in some of those globular clusters of stars above and below the Milky Way central bulge of this big spiral galaxy we live in. Mm-hmm. And one of those planets was seen to be about 11 billion years old. So if you think about that, that means you allow a little time for big supernovas to blow up, shoot some oxygen, and for other elements to mix in some of the planets in the vicinity. You can imagine or see where some aliens could have evolved billions of years, or their planets would simply have been ready for life billions, not millions, but billions of years before us.
Right.
So if that's the case, I mean, you can imagine they'd be would have moved around and be in different places. And, you know, if there are aliens all around, it wouldn't just be one or two. There certainly would be no one single alien regime. There would be a variety. There would be different younger populations like us, or maybe what some people call the gray aliens, look like they're also relatively younger, although they may technically sort of, you know, I guess modified in some ways, if you know what people say, abductees and contactees say. And there would also be larger populations in each galaxy, larger populations and some medium-sized, and of course, like us, we're an independent, smaller, just barely beginning.
Well, and like you said with the grays relatively older. I mean, who knows what relative could be? Relative could be a million years to the next neighbor, which is, you know, 3 million years. I mean, the numbers could be very large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if there's the more planets there are, we already know that, you know, one out of every two planet stars or more is probably going to have planets. And I mean, you know, the most recent estimate on the Kepler satellite program, the one I was telling you about, looking for little Earth-sized planets going right in front of the stars, dimming the light so that they can detect it there. They're estimating 110, possibly 110 million Earth-sized planets in this one galaxy alone. So you start thinking about that. Mm-hmm. That means that, you know, we could possibly find some relatively close to us, possibly some even, you know, less evolved than we are, still back in the ape category. But there might be some that are, you know, sort of understand pretty much exactly how we are and think, oh, we remember that, sure. It was only, what, 50,000 years ago, you know, not too long.
Right.
Their time.
You know, another factor that I heard Stanton Friedman talk about recently that really kind of hit me this time, and I don't know, I'm sure I've heard him say it before, but that the Drake equation calculates how long a civilization might exist, but it doesn't factor in people colonizing or leaving the planet that they originated from, which would make sense. You even have Stephen Hawking in the news recently saying that we need to leave the planet if we're to survive, which makes sense as to something, you know, a highly evolved technologically civilization could do.
You know, from what, you know, if we look at the data that we have so far, we have people apparently direct contactees. We have, I mean, from Philip Corso, for example, is this colonel who worked on, he says, a program that taking technology directly from Roswell. So there's a whole Pentagon program, and of course, he said that the U.S. government was essentially sort of revolutionized from within because of a new, they saw it as the security need, more advanced beings buzzing in the Roswell case. It was the only nuclear bomber base. It was from where the Enola Gay took off to go off to do what it did, you know, to bomb Hiroshima. They were worried, thinking, oh, you know, why are they buzzing our military bases? And they began to think of it as a security threat. And the point being is that, you know, there's been a lot of time for people to think about it. So there are reports from Corso's time, there are abductees, contactees, and there are people from different parts of, you know, of different governments all over the planet. So we've got a lot of data about it, and that's where we are now. We're sort of looking at that data and trying to determine, well, what, how do they think? And that's what my book is about. How do they think? How do they feel, think about us? And it's actually, my book's an attempt to look more from an alien perspective as much as possible, rather than our perspective.
Great. Yeah, and I want to get, of course, more into detail about that perspective after this break. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with George Lobono talking about the alien mind, seeing it from the alien's point of view. Stay tuned. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Hey, that's me. It's Open Minds Radio, and we're talking to George Lobono. Hopefully, you're going to be talking to him, because you can call in and do that. Someone in the chat asked, and they're like, yeah, sweet. And if you're not in the Phoenix metro area, it's 1-866-536-1100. That's toll-free. Or if you are, that's 602-277-5369. Hopefully Dan from in the chat will call in with his question. If not, I'll ask it anyway. But one thing I wanted to get with you, go to next, of course, George, is a lot of the information I know that you use comes from contactees or abductees who have communicated with different beings. But, and it does seem like a lot of, as I'm sure you know, a lot of contactees and so forth kind of argue about certain points and disagree on some things. Of course, they do agree on a lot. How do you kind of deal with that, what the difference is in what people are saying?
The way to deal with that is to pull further back. Rather than look at one population or one dispute about whether the grays are friendly or the, you know, the sort of whether they're human-looking aliens and so forth, the best thing to do is to keep pulling further back, looking at more and more groups of aliens, looking at trying to see what they're like in common and what's valid about them, what doesn't appear to be valid. Also, is to try as best you can to think about using what has a good internal consistency in reports that you hear. Who are reliable, thoughtful sources? Are they basing some much, or are they well read in science such that they would understand the science and be able to sort of probe or, you know, test something that happened to them and you know, see whether they're being given a kind of a sales job, let's say, possibly, you know, like by an alien that might have an agenda of a sort, or they might be misinterpreting. So
right.
I would say that's, look at the larger scale. That's how you best sort it out.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know not being fearful you talk about a lot, which makes sense, especially when you're studying something that can be a bit scary for people. And for the most part, you're pretty positive. However, one thing I wanted to question is essentially starting off with, you know, what you found out. What is abduction all about?
Well, that's the big question. And, you know, the different people, David Jacobs, a PhD at Temple University, has abductees saying that it's clearly about a breeding program. That abductees are taken, reproductive materials are taken from them. People are sort of numbed out. It's a kind of new kind of energy technology, just sort of, it's essentially kind of slowing time or freezing nerve impulses going down part of the spine, and people are essentially floated. They're not just kind of crunched through a wall. It's like folding a kind of an energy wave. You know, everybody, you may not believe it, but you're not made out of solid things. Science determined after 1928 that the energy, everything it has is moving around back and forth, and there are little waves here and there, sometimes in more than one place at a time. Nothing is solid, nothing is concrete. People say they move through and they're taken up, and it looks like abduction is about A, study, B, in some cases, a breeding program to produce what appear to be, according to abductees, and well, military was concerned about this too, because the Roswell aliens, according to Philip Corso, looked in the eyes of the military too human. They were too much like us. They had to have some sort of human component. So breeding hybrids that look like us, the question is, what for? Why would they be trying to use them in the society for, you know, for certain reasons? What's going on?
And do you know, or?
Well, I would say, you know, on the one hand, well, for example, if we look at the story of the most commonly known aliens called the Greys, they're those, you know, kind of 3.5-4 foot tall aliens, the kind of large, sometimes wraparound eyes. They appear, according to some of abductee accounts, to be, you know, working on certain hybrids, but they're part of a larger alignment of aliens. And some abductees or some contactees say, you know what they say? The story is that they're trying to get our genes because they've been reproducing non-sexually, cloning in order to improve themselves, select a gene for, let's say, better radiation resistance or one for a larger brain, and you've got cloned pretty much alike aliens, but they're consistent. You know, they get rid of certain defects. Problem
right.
being, they don't have new genes coming in to sort of give them the physical rigor that we have, and sometimes there's the genetic diversity. So they try to tell abductees, or essentially reportedly telling humans, we're doing it to try to improve ourselves because we've been going too long as cloned. The problem with that story, though, is that they're part of a much larger alignment of aliens, or sort of an interaction with aliens, reportedly, according to some accounts, from not even from this galaxy. But the point being is, they could always get genes from some of those other aliens. They would not have to borrow human genes. So that story, you know, but, you know, so the next question is, if they're not really, they don't really need our genes, well, they might want them for science purposes, but what if they would want to expand and have influence in this area, and by breeding human-looking hybrids, the more you breed the hybrid, the first version sort of half human, half alien, like what people say have landed at Roswell. But if you go breed that with a human three more times, it looks almost entirely human. And the fear, according to Sergeant Robert Dean and Colonel Corso and some others who worked on reportedly deep black programs, was that aliens could be in the White House, or there could be an alien in some high part of the society, and we wouldn't know it. And what would they be doing? Would they be working towards one particular group's influence or domination here? You'd want to know what the abduction is really about.
Mm-hmm. So you think it could be, which, you know, of course I've heard hypothesized before, it could be that they're using this these hybrids to gain influence.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, you know, there's evidence to suggest that. I mean, there's also evidence that abduction is kind of, part from their perspective, some of it's just experimental. They could always say this. You know, if you cornered them, you know, say aliens are here and they're abducting, and they're very intelligent, they're very, very scientific, you know. And aliens, by the way, are more subdued. They tend to be a little bit, they're not violent, and since they're telepathic, their communications are largely kind of, electronically, they have an energy system that kind of amplifies mind frequencies, so they can communicate more than just one to each other, you know, like in a group, for example, convey much more when they talk like that. But because they're like that, you know, they can talk to people and tell us what's going on, but this is kind of, it's a science perspective for them. They might want to just look and, well, we've got to study these people, and reportedly they've told people or communicated that they want to help, they want to be ready to have genes for us if, you know, we thought that we wanted to either work with them, they would have genes to help improve us, and there are even reports of very human-looking aliens. Some people call these the Nordics, the, quote, Pleiadians, even though they could never have originated in this group of stars called the Pleiades because they're just brand-new stars, you know,
mm-hmm.
But... you know, that's what makes you worry about that account, why they'd call themselves that. But human-looking aliens could conceivably be some of these slightly modified human versions taken from during abductions and being shown to us, you know, here, these gentler, they're kind of telepathic, they have this technology, and they seem to, in some cases, they have crews that are responsible for what they do. Although the question would be is, if they're part of an abducting alignment, or do they share the same agenda? And that would be a concern.
Right. And moving a little bit off topic here, just because there's a question in the chat, and of course this subject's so huge that I want to try to touch on as many subjects as we can as possible. Someone from the chat is asking, how many different types of aliens do you estimate are out there?
Well, because, you know, are out there, I'll tell you exactly what I think. I think there are trillions of populations.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Not here, right in our neighborhood. I mean, probably interacting with us. Now, that's probably what the person had in mind. How many are interacting with humans? My best bet would be dozens, possibly even over 100.
Wow.
But some would be interacting, would just be, you know, if there is an alignment, say, like the Greys, they have certain technology and they're affiliated with some older aliens, slightly older apparently. It's a larger grouping, reportedly, according to almost all the accounts. There's a variety of aliens in it. Fair neighboring aliens might not think, well, you can't just dive in there with a fleet of, you know, 15 craft, because one of them might be seized, and then some of our people get abducted, and next thing you know, they're trying to do that to us, you know? And so the point being is that some of them could be kind of cautious about how they're kind of interacting here. But since there's so many galaxies and so many planets, I assume that they're are trillions of different populations. The point, but you have to watch out because some of them could be very large, hundreds or even thousands of planets. Some of them small, one or two or a few, or even kind of interacting with, you know, a little group of trading with other aliens. But one thing I was going to say, you know, all the evidence that we've seen so far, everything, I'm not kidding, every single account of every single alien that I've heard of, except maybe there's some weird exception, are all equalitarian. See, all their societies have apparently gotten over the bump that we have, which is where you have, like, rich and poor and a poor distribution, a bad distribution of resources, and, of course, that wrecks the ecology, and that some people want too much, and some people aren't responsible, and corruption thrives. Well, aliens apparently learned how to share, and according to the stories we hear, well, sometimes that can be good, sometimes it could be a little bit repressive, and, you know, it's like telepathic,
right,
community of mind, and, you know, can you think freely in that kind of situation? Do you have to do what the regime says?
Right.
And
I get your
really
point
question.
There. So we'll get more into that when we get back from the break. Actually, we have some more questions calling in, callers, and chat. So stay tuned. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
I want to mention before the show is done that our magazine, our latest magazine, is out. Subscribers should already have it. If not, feel free to contact us at contact@openminds.tv. And others, if you don't have it, you can go to openminds.tv and get it. Or you can go to your local bookstore, Barnes & Noble, some of those kind of places, Hastings. What's the other big one? Borders, that's right. I couldn't think of it for a second there. But it's out there. It's about abductions, and we have this very cool cover with a little gray fella, just like we're talking about tonight. Now, before we go further, George, we do have a call in the queue, so I want to be sure to get to that, and I'm sure that this interesting question will spawn further conversation. Danny, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for taking my call.
Cool. I think this is the first time you've called in. You've always threatened to do it. You've been in the chat, and you've never done it.
Right. So I finally got the cojones to do it, I guess, since
yes.
You guys are not going to be on there for much longer.
Yes.
So I actually have two questions, and then I'll hang up and, like, listen off the phone. I've been into, like, I guess ufology and UFOs and stuff for a long time, and I believe alien abductions are real and that they're happening. However, my wife is a big-time skeptic and thinks all of it is just, you know, a load of you-know-what. And she says, and I kind of agree with her sometimes, that researchers and other people may be making a fundamental mistake when we assign human motivation and values to alien cultures and use our human history as a benchmark for what aliens may do, like colonizing other planets, like Stan Freeman was talking about. So I'd like for George to answer that or talk about that. And one other thing is, if there are civilizations out there that are perhaps millions and billions of years older than us, why would they send actual biological entities here? Why wouldn't they just send robots or some sort of cyborgs or something here? So those are my questions, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. So I guess we'll tackle the first one before we get to the sending Terminators here. But talking about, you know, from us using a human perspective.
Yeah, they call that anthropomorphism. Everybody makes that mistake. And you know what? Even the best researchers are going to make that mistake. People ascribe, are they friend or foe? Well, they could be something, not necessarily friend or foe.
Mm-hmm.
They would just, you know, maybe just studying us and may think, well, we are kind of primitive. We could be dangerous. But, you know, we're humans are kind of emotional, reportedly, compared to aliens. So, yeah. That's the key is to be able to step outside of one's skin. Aliens, reportedly, their practice is to essentially almost, it's like a remote viewing, not of themselves, it's because consciousness and this sort of telepathy and their kind of psychotronics, it kind of expands out. It goes way out, and that's the weird thing about it. It sort of cycles into kind of deeper space, right where you are, like in the nucleus, or it's sort of jumping out. But the idea is that they step out of their skin, and they have to think, like, well, how does community think? Because there's this kind of more social identity. In our case, we're sort of thinking, you know, I, me, and mine, and we tend to think, oh, our aliens are here. They're trying to take what we want, or maybe they're, you know, trying to eat people. There are kinds of weird things people think. And, you know, it's the challenge for researchers is to try to just set all of our conventions aside and essentially, as Buddhists might say, see with beginner's eyes. Don't make assumptions. Just see what you're seeing and don't guess, deduce sometimes. Just be open to what you see.
Yeah, that's what's always hard with considering motivations, I think. I think the best you can do is follow the data. You know, we can just gather what we see them doing and put things together that way. And before we run out of time, too, I want to get to his next question. Why wouldn't they send cyborgs, or do you believe they are doing something similar to that?
You know, I don't think – when people – a lot of people say, oh, they think the Grays report, we keep hitting on the Grays. They think the Grays are sort of robotic, and that was an early sort of misconception. They may have had some sort of, you know, microelectronic sort of things implanted in some spot here or there, but they're, you know, 99.whatever% tissue, some of it genetically engineered. But aliens would send robots, probably a smart alien, but the first thing they would do is they would send a crafted comet, would hover. I would, if I were an alien, I would send a craft, I would let it hover for about, 3 months, keep it sort of invisible, pick up all the sweep all the electronic communications, go down, study whatever with the mini microcraft, study details of different societies. Then, it would communicate back to the alien society, and if the people, the aliens themselves wanted to come, then they would go, and that would begin essentially like the contact or the actual direct hands-on study, looking at the biology, listening, maybe interacting, interacting with people, either, communicated thought or sometimes directly, see how, what is this new population like? Are they violent? Are they reasonable, rational? Do they have peaceful ideas about peace and, social belonging? And do they complete the circle, in a sense, which is what alien societies apparently think in terms of?
And do you think that scenario has happened then? And perhaps that's what happened first? They sent the probes before coming physically?
Yeah, well, that's the question. Here's the thing. With reportedly alien technology, the ability to move almost instantaneously over significant distances, not absolutely instantly, but, reportedly sort of folding space into itself is the term that people have used to sort of fold space and fold it. The ability to do that doesn't really make it so that they have to send robots. They could do a lot of fast travel and just be there and, use the technology while they're there.
Right. Plus, what if you build the robots and they go crazy and try to attack you?
Yeah, some people think that's from perspective. Do they have just, first off, why would they have a robot? Why would they need a robot? If they could, let's say they could invent, there's a guy named David Adair. It says he went to Groom Lake, Area 51. This is in the 70s. This is an Apollo scientist, engineer. And he was shown, reportedly, a craft that seemed to respond to his touch. It changed color cloud-like and then light and spark and things, and would, sometimes could respond to his thought. So they could have essentially intelligent craft that wouldn't necessarily be up moving, walking like robots.
Right.
Their craft could have computational and, sort of thinking responsibility just built into the structure itself. That would be the probably a more advanced step than a robot.
Right. Interesting. And I mentioned, of course, the cyborgs attacking you type of thing, because the artificial intelligence and all that it means. And interesting enough, Richard Dolan brought that into the talk he did at MUFON, talking about AI and that being a factor. But I do want to move, you did talk about these different groups, for instance, the Greys working for larger groups. And I know in your book you talk about some of these mega organizations like a federation and then smaller organizations, and including kind of independent, you call them.
Yeah, I'm careful about how I use that word federation because, most people think, it's a Star Wars term, and it sounds like people are mixing up sci-fi with whatever. But that, according to, there's a Pulitzer Prize man named Philip Kropp, who he reported, now he's a newspaper reporter. It was an editor, a very conservative guy, taken up for a number of days as part of a reported diplomatic opening with the Greys alignment. And they said that the aliens who took him up were an older group called, they called themselves Verdants. And, much larger population, older, but also, they seem to colonize or take a lot of planets. And they seem to essentially, the Greys reportedly have a planet that essentially died or was killed and misuse of technology. And these larger populations apparently have, more advanced technology. But the technology is, let's say, look on this planet. Do those who have the most advanced technology, are they necessarily the most civilized? There's a question. It partly that, internally they think of themselves most civilized, but sometimes they can be a little bit more presumptuous and think, take what we want and we'll do as we feel we should. And that's what you have to think aliens would do also, because some of these larger populations, they would be tasked, for example, with, there's a kind of an energy ecology. The new energy that alien craft and this sort of they call this kind of a gravitic energy. It's a different kind of fluctuation in space-time. It's not something that's totally outside of you. You would or could be partly composed of kind of a fluctuation of this sort, but it's sort of teased out of the nucleus. It's like a child, a child gets in a bath. If you move back and forth with the waves, you can spill water right out. Imagine somebody just sort of fluctuating waves in just in atoms, in your own brain, for example. Just moving it back and forth, such as a gravitic sort of thing spills out, and it has like a more instant pull across great distances, weird as that may sound. Well, so bigger
populations. Kind of makes my headache worse when you talk about that.
Yeah, the reason, it's not like a big force thing. As a matter of fact, alien science is a science of effects. you could communicate over great distances this way. And read my book. It'll talk a lot about
yeah,
it. Stephen Greer,
which is the next point, because unfortunately we're out of time. The Alien Mind, and this is alienmindbook.org is the website. You can go there and purchase it. It's also on Amazon. You know, we covered a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. The time went really quick, but thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we'll have to have you on again to talk more.
Sounds good.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Man, the show's just cruised by. Next week, we have my cousin, Jason Cordova, and he's going to be on the show. He actually is the founder of the Metropolitan State College Denver Crypto Science Society. He just graduated with his aerospace operations degree, and he has, along with me, been investigating the paranormal for a long time. So we'll talk about some of our exploits and how we get the younger people involved, because he's actually been the one person who I know who has been successful in this, and everybody wants that to happen. So come listen to the show next week. Same time, same channel. Open Minds Radio. Thanks for listening.